Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Kanairy. There's a road in Fort Myers that starts at Colonial Boulevard and winds its way out to the beaches. If you've ever visited Fort Myers Beach or Sanibel Island, you quite likely have been on Summerlin Road. We recently received this curious Gulf Coast question from a listener named Jesse Sanders. He said, I drive down Summerlin Road maybe three times a week, so I decided to look up who the road was named after. Interesting character for sure. People may be interested in history of the area and the cattlemen behind Summerlin Road. So we're bringing back in historian Jim Powers from the Imaginarium History and Science Center in Fort Myers to get his insights into Jacob Summerlin, the man known as the Cracker Cow Hunter. Jim, thanks for being here. Welcome back to the show.
Mike, I'm always glad to be here. Thank you, sir.
And out there, have you ever wondered who Summerlin Road was named after, or maybe you've got a historical tidbit you picked up along the way about Jacob Summerlin? To join our conversation, give us a call now. The number's 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. So, was Jacob Summerlin known as the King of Crackers or King of the Cracker Cow Hunters in his lifetime, or is that
absolutely?
So, who was this guy?
Well, this guy was what we might call today a really split personality. He could be envisioned as an entrepreneur in a late 1800s black silk suit with tie and polished shoes, or he could be in a corn cob pipe gauchos outfit. So he was very successful in both characters.
When was he when did he first arrive in Florida? Or he was, okay, let's clarify this. So we said earlier in the show that he was the first person born in Florida. Well, he's clearly not the first person born where Florida is, but was he or was he not the first person born in the United States state of Florida?
Well, there are, number one, the state Jake was born in 1820.
Okay.
Florida became a state in 1845.
Okay.
Florida became a possession in 1821.
Okay.
He was born in 1820.
So he was – so it wasn't Florida yet.
No, and quite frankly, the Onis-Adams Treaty was done in 1819 that ceded Florida. From Spain. But you had to cross the ocean a couple of times – and you had to have approval of the United States Senate and so forth. So the actual –
they couldn't just fax over the papers.
Exactly. So the actual transition took place in 21. So that relegates this all to myth. That's point one.
Okay.
Point two is that he was born in Camden County, Georgia.
Oh.
And then as a small child, moved to the south side of the St. Mary's, which was the borderline between Florida territories and Georgia.
So what is the source of that myth, or how does it wind up in his Wikipedia entry, et cetera?
Well, like all of them, they're everywhere, and it depends on who tells the tale and who interprets the documents.
So he made his fortune in cattle.
That he did, but he made his fortune in so many other things. He took cattle money and invested it. He had hotels. He actually created cities. Orlando is pretty much a product of Jake Summerlin, and he was quite frankly a terrific smuggler.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So when did he arrive down here?
Okay, if you want to talk about his association.
We'll get back to the smuggling. I just want to try to get the time frames right here.
Well, he actually came here in the 1870s. Jake moved here in 78, and he bought the pier at Punta Raza, which was the old Fort Dulaney pier from F.A. Henry.
Okay.
And then his son, Samuel, moved here.
Samuel Summerlin?
That's correct.
Okay.
He and his son, that's his oldest son. And they went into the importation or export business from Punta Raza, a business they'd always been in since mm-hmm. before this American Civil War. And he was here until 18, I think, the winter of 83.
Okay. Well, let's back up now. So when he was a cattleman back then, one of his nicknames was the Cracker Cow Hunter. They were rounding up feral cows. I mean, how do you characterize what was going on in the cattle business back when he was getting started?
Pretty simple. If you'll think the days before barbed wire and fences, mm-hmm. you think free-roaming cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Cattle were sometimes not marked at all, sometimes branded, sometimes even have earmarks. That's where they take little nicks out of the ears and in recorded places so you could identify the cattle.
Mm-hmm.
But they were all free range, free roving. So if you think about it, to make money, they had to be gathered.
Right.
And so herding was the big thing. And so herding was predominantly done with that cattle whip.
Mm-hmm. And that's the cracker.
That's the cracker part, yeah.
Hmm. So where was he when he was herding these cows? Was that up further into the central part of the state?
Well, you think Florida, you must remember, until really in the last quarter of the 19th century, was predominantly in the center of Florida and the north of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, even on a tangent note, you're talking about the same as slavery.
Right.
Slaves were prominent in northern Florida, where the cash crops were grown. But we were virtually free here of any type of slavery except for personal house servants and a few skilled artisans, simply because you didn't need slaves to raise cattle.
Hmm. Was he a slave owner?
Oh, he was definitely a slave owner. He had a couple of favorite slaves, one by the name of Toby. He built anywhere he'd go, he built Toby a house. He had another favorite that he bought in 1863 in the middle of the American Civil War, and that was Prince Johnson. And he did the same for Prince Johnson. They were his pals on the plains as well as his slaves. And if you think about it, it's the same relationship between George Washington and William Lee, his personal manservant.
Hmm. So where was he, ideologically during the Civil War?
All over the place. It's easy to understand. He had such an entrepreneurial spirit. And he was probably an opponent of secession. But he was a Southern gentleman. He was a gentrified, even though he dressed as a cowboy. And he was a proponent of maintaining the lifestyle, but not necessarily the war. Consequence, business won out. That's where a great deal of smuggling occurred. He and one of his better friends, James McKay from Tampa, who owned a lot of ships and had various businesses, did at least six trips that are recorded to Cuba during the war. They would sell the cattle and take the money there and replenish the boat with all the necessities of life, come back, and then sell it to the Southerners at exorbitant prices.
Oh, so they were selling the stuff that people used in their daily lives.
Exactly right. Some would call it profiteering, mm-hmm. would they not? But he was, again, though, he was, he was the scout for Major Footman when the Cow Cavalry attacked Fort Myers in 1865. He had participated previously in the Second and Third Seminole Wars. In fact, he spent maybe the first 10 or 12 years as an adult in various volunteer military units fighting Seminoles.
And that would have been – put that into historical context for us. Like, so who's –
that? That would be at age 16,
mm-hmm.
and he was born in 20, so that's 1836. Mm-hmm. From there until he was about – 27, 28, something like that.
Gotcha. And so then during the Civil War, did he fight during the Civil War, or was he more of just a trader trying to make a little money off the situation?
Once again, both. This man was very complex. And he was the commissary sergeant, which was actually a commissioned position in the 5th Commissary District out of Tampa for the Confederacy. And as such, he moved up to about 25,000 head of cattle across the Georgia line and ultimately became the sole source toward the end of that war for the Army of Tennessee after the Red River had been cut off and Texas was cut off from the Confederacy.
Hmm.
So, but at the same time, he would sell cattle under another hat to Union forces, which may make their way to the Dry Tortugas or may make their way to the blockade fleet.
He applied for, at least, because I read at least that much, he applied for a pardon from Andrew Jackson after the war. Is that correct?
He certainly did apply for a pardon.
Did he get it?
He did get it. And he had to swear that he never killed anyone who was a Unionist and that he never wanted to – he was never a proponent of secession.
And didn't it also start with that he was worth more than $20,000? Was that a criteria or just a chip on, you know, that
no,
was just
no,
a,
that's a criteria.
Huh.
A mass pardon was given after the American Civil War with an explicit exception. And that was that if you had value, personal value of over $20,000, you needed a specific pardon from the United States.
Hmm.
So that's why he had an application as opposed to having a blank pardon.
Hmm. We're getting a bit of a history lesson on Jacob Summerlin, the cattleman who Summerlin Road in Fort Myers is named after. My guest is Jim Powers. He's the historian at the IMAG History and Science Center in Fort Myers. To ask Jim a question or make a comment, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. So he gets down here to Fort Myers, and you said like late 1870s, which is towards the end of his life, right?
That's correct. And he died in 93.
Okay. And he owned a lot of land around here, right?
He bought 1,000 acres.
Okay.
When he and Samuel moved in and built a home and a hotel at Punta Raza, he also purchased purchased a pier. He built another pier. And he purchased 1,000 acres. And one of the interesting things about that 1,000 acres, it had a tremendous number of pens to hold cattle. And secondly, he built a corduroy road.
A what?
A corduroy road, you know.
Define that for us.
That's a whole bunch of logs all the same shape and size that are put together, bump, 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 bump,
gotcha,
on the way. Because there's no way to get from Fort Myers or down the old cattle trails and you know, what today is McGregor Boulevard,
right,
and so forth. There's no way to get there without crossing swamp. And so
that was the first way that they did it.
Exactly. He created a corduroy road about a mile's worth where it really got deep and bad.
Did the stretch where Summerlin Road is now in Fort Myers in Lee County, was that a route that he would have ever taken, or did they just name him – they just put his name on a road that took you to the beach?
Well, there's some dispute about that, but I take the position that he might have accidentally traveled over what may become, but the major trail was, in fact, through Fort Myers and
mm-hmm.
so forth. Because you must remember, all the roads started out, major arteries, started out as animal trails and then Indian trails and then military trails and then roads and then highways.
Hmm. I have in my office right down the hall here a comprehensive plan for Lee County from back in the 50s, and it has dotted lines on it where they thought they might be able to put roads someday.
Right.
And it's really interesting that there it is. There is Summerlin Road as far back as that because they knew they wanted a road down there.
And they needed a bypass.
Yeah.
If to get to Crescent Beach, which is today is Fort Myers
Correct.
Beach, in the 20s, a real character who's a story all into itself. But a gentleman built a road, which is, if you think about what's the Morris, John Morris Road now, mm-hmm. that goes to Bunch's Beach. Mm-hmm. And then it turned heading toward along the shoreline. And for a portion, it was even bricked. And it ultimately got to what was created as a bridge in 1921 over to the beach. There was no Estero. There was no Summerlin. There was no nothing to get there because it was a beachfront road.
Right, right.
So they had from the 1926, 7, 8 along in there, the plans that you read would all have a contingency for a number of routes to bypass that and go directly to the island.
Hmm. You know, I can remember very vividly as a young child in the early 80s when they started building Summerlin Road from Colonial, and my young brain could not comprehend that that was going to be how we went out to the beaches. But, you know, funny how history works, huh?
Well, funny that you should call yourself a young child in the 80s.
Well, Jim, that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guest. Jim Powers is the historian at the IMAG History and Science Center in Fort Myers. Jim, thanks always for your time and historical insights.
Appreciate it, my friend.
And thanks to our earlier guests, FGCU student Carino Carcamo. Sorry, Carina, if you're listening. And Dr. Lirio Negroni, FGCU associate professor in the Department of Social Work. Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn, Rachel Iacovone, and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.